Welcome to the Great American Collectible Show, seen Wednesdays on the Sports Collectors Daily Facebook page and the Great American Collectibles Facebook page. You can also listen to us on iHeartRadio, Pandora, and Spotify. The Great American Collectibles Show is brought to you by the National Sports Collectors Convention and Sports Collectors Daily. Tonight's headlines are brought to you by Sports Collectors Daily. For all your hobby news, features, and more, go to sportscollectorsdaily.com. And now your host, Tom Zappala, and Red Sox Hall of Famer, Rico Petrocelli.
Hey, ho-ho! Hello, everybody. Hello, Tom. That's it. That's all I'm saying this show.
It's hot in here.
It was freezing when we came in, and then Chrissy put the temperature up. Now we're both sweating.
I'm taking my clothes off.
I got long johns on.
How was your week?
Lousy.
Why?
I don't know.
You played golf? You smoked cigars?
What else? No, I didn't play golf. I hit some golf balls, but too cold for me. You know, anything under 70, forget it. I'm done.
Tom, how are you feeling? Thanks for asking, Rick.
Well, that's great. Thank you very much. I feel good.
No? You're supposed to be asking me how I feel.
How do you feel?
I'm feeling better.
That's great.
I'm on the mend.
Good, good. I had back.
I had three herniated discs.
Oh,
my God. And now I think two of them are... gone.
Re-herniated?
One of them's still there.
One's still herniated. Yeah.
I don't know. What the hell do I know? Welcome to the Great American Collectible Show. Tom Zapp, my good friend and co-host, Red Sox Hall of Famer Rico Petrocelli.
Sir.
Formerly shortstop. Then he got yanked and got thrown to third base.
Veteran of foreign
wars. And from there, they gave him his release. And then after that, he went to manage Pawtucket, right?
Well, not right after, but later, yeah. Now, first the White Sox. I was there with 3 years with the White Sox run manager.
You know, welcome, obviously, hey. John Tarby.
Yeah, John.
And our good friend Jeff Maron from Rockhurst Auctions. Guys, I got to tell you something. So we do a segment every week called Another Gax Blast from the Past. Now, you're not going to be able to hear it. You're not going to be able to see it until it airs, but you'll hear the audio. Every week, you know, it's a little minute and a half, like newsreel or video of something Rico did or something the Red Sox did. Yesterday, I spent an hour.
Get out of here.
An hour. Rico, for 2 years, was the host of Candlepins for Cash on Channel 5 in Boston.
25.
Channel 25 in Boston for 2 years. I went on YouTube. I Googled it. I could not find one film of you hosting that show. And that show was popular.
Yeah, but with Bob Gamir, not with me.
You took over after him.
Yeah, but I...
And why did you take over for him? Because he got arrested.
They asked me.
He got arrested.
He went to Vegas.
Oh, he did?
Yeah. But that was very interesting. But yeah, I mean, you know...
I'm trying to find one. So if anybody out there can find a film clip of Rico Petrocelli hosting Candlepins for Cash, I'm begging you to send me the link. I'm asking you to send, and we will feature it on a Gax Blast from the Past.
Why? I don't want it. I don't want you to do that.
Absolutely.
25 grand, maybe.
All right. Welcome, guys. John, how you doing, number one?
Doing well, and you?
Good. And Jeff, you're doing well?
I am. Thanks for asking.
And John, I'm glad to see that Aaron Judge is doing well.
I'm glad to see that the Yankees are in first place. Hey, it's April. It's April. But, you know, you can't get excited. It's April.
No, I agree. I totally agree.
Long way to go.
You're not absolutely.
162 games, boy.
Absolutely. All right, let's start with Jeff, please. Mr. Maron, you have an auction. Hasn't started yet, correct? But it starts in a couple days. When does it start? The 24th?
Oh, it did start. It started last week. We have an auction that closes April 25th and 26th, this Thursday and Friday. As usual, we do a big day of sports on day one, where, you know, card, you know, autographs, game use stuff. And day two is sort of, we blanket call it Americana, but it's Hollywood rock and roll, some historical stuff. Always a lot of Elvis, you know.
Let's start with the baseball stuff. You have the thing that intrigued me is, you got a ton of unopened packs.
Yeah, we ran into a wonderful collection, single owner collection of a huge run of unopened packs, starting with 52 Bowman, 52 Tops was the highlight, all the way up into the 80s with some unopened boxes in the later years. And also had a display box collection that went right along with it from the 40s. It went even further back to the 40s, all the way through the 80s. And then, of course, there's the set run that went with it as well. So it's... But those packs, that was really the highlight. It was really fun getting those in, getting them graded with PSA, and nice. Just so many issues. So many issues are represented.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah.
I want to ask you about an unopened pack. If you had a 52 tops, yeah, unopened pack in the slab,
yeah,
wouldn't you be tempted to open it?
What do you mean open it?
Open the pack rather than hold on to it as a people hold on to
yearly,
them.
Yeah, I would because
right?
Yeah.
You gotta roll the dice.
Absolutely. But
Jeff, would you? I mean, you guys, John, you know, you're not a card guy. You would hold on to it too. You wouldn't roll the dice.
No, I would not open the pack. What do you think, Jeff?
No, they're collected in their own right. Exactly. It's actually a low series pack. There's some scholarship out there on the 52 packs that the darker green printing on the high numbers indicates it's a high number pack. And this is most likely a first series pack. Although, as an aside, and this will be coming up this summer, from this collection, there were, you know, maybe 200 packs, about 50 of them couldn't be graded because they may have been opened or they didn't quite pass muster with PSA. So we're actually are going to open all those on camera and do some sort of film presentation with it and then get the cards inside graded, et cetera. So, yeah.
I think that would be so cool.
Oh, it's great.
It would be fun. It would be fun.
You guys both know Leighton Sheldon and Rico and I, several nationals ago, probably five years ago now, we did a pack opening with him on stage and, opened up a 55 Bowman mantle that PSA graded as a 9.
That's fantastic.
And the kid paid $500 for it and wound up selling it for $60,000. And since then, that card has sold for over $100,000. Crazy,
sure.
Crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Well, hey.
All right. So, Jeff, you have unopened packs. What else do you have that's on the baseball end?
So we got a ton of autographs as usual. That always comes in big chunks. We have a huge autograph collection that's focused on signed cards. That's kind of the other big highlight of the auction. We've got an Aaron rookie card. We've got a lot of 50s cards signed by Mantle, Aaron, Mays, nice. Even some of the combo cards, which you never see signed from the 56 set, 50 set. And those signed cards go all the way up through the 60s, 70s, even some later in the 80s, even some modern cards. We have a Victor Wembanyama signed card. And then in that same collection, there was a huge run of signed yellow Hall of Fame plaques. You know, those are produced at the Hall of Fame every year, and they're collectible as a postcard. But then, of course, they became really popular to get signed. So we have a couple hundred of those. So it's been a really nice auction with a lot of convergence of some big art.
You guys, do you get more interest in other words, as soon as baseball season starts, do you get more interest or
is it year round?
Is it year round or football season comes, do you get more interest people wanting to sell football cards,
so it's a good question. I get that question all the time from consignors, and my line is that if we put this stuff in a dark alley and told the guys the auction was starting, they'd all find it. I think John can attest to that. The collectors collect 365.
Yeah.
They don't stop. Now there are exceptions to that where you want to dovetail with an event. You might want to have an auction at, during the National or have an auction. Like on the entertainment side, we do an auction down in Memphis during Big Elvis Week celebration for higher end Elvis pieces. Yeah. So in that there is a timing issue, but guys collect 24/7, 365 days. So it's not really driven by that necessarily.
Mm-hmm. So. What about the non-sports part of it, Jeff?
Yeah, it's another great auction. We've got some really nice collections. This is a little bit of a nerdy Elvis thing, but we've got a file copy collection of early Sun records from Marion Kiesker. She was actually the woman who recorded Elvis the first time he walked into their studio in Memphis. And she was Sam Phillips' right-hand man. So we have a collection of the file copies she took home with her of a ton of early, really rare Sun and Chess and other records. Part of the Sun record story is that Jackie Brenston recorded the song Rocket 88 at Sun Records. It ended up being released on Chess, but that's often considered the first rock and roll song in 1951. We have a copy of that.
Very cool. Very cool.
We have acetates from that. So it's kind of fun to find just ridiculously mint copies of records that are 70 years old, 75 years old.
JT, I know you and I think we're cut from the same cloth when it comes to music. And, You know, my wheelhouse is late 60s, early 70s, Allman Brothers, Santana, those types of bands, Jethro Tull. Is there a big market for that stuff, Jeff?
Oh, for sure, yeah. And the rock and roll is really driven by autographs, of course, because there's so many fewer artifacts. Baseball's wonderful because there's jerseys, there's bats, there's caps, there's all sorts of stuff, trophies and awards and advertising pieces. The rock and roll stuff is, there are some things, obviously, you know, I have a huge Elvis component to my business where, because he gave away so much stuff. We talked about that before, a huge pool of jewelry and clothing. We have some clothing in the auction this time. And then for most artists, though, it's kind of driven by artifacts. There's the vintage poster end of it that's really good from that era. People collect all through there, and different segments of it keep sort of percolating and growing over the years. It's kind of fun to watch.
John, before we let Jeff go, was I right about your musical taste, or was I a little off?
No, you're right there, right on target.
Yeah. Have you ever been to? Go ahead.
No, I saw, in memory of Dickie Betts here. Saw the Allman Brothers Band on Atlantic City Steel Pier when they came out with the Idlewild South album.
Great. I saw them. I'll tell you, when I was a kid, I saw some bands in Hampton Beach, New Hampshire at the Hampton Beach Casino. In a period of 4 weeks, I saw Janis Joplin, The Rascals, Jethro Tull, all within a four-week period. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable. Jeff, your website address.
It's rockhurstauctions.com. The auction ends this Thursday and Friday, and the bidding's going pretty strong. Go.
All right, my friend. We'll talk to you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hey, we'll see you at the National.
Absolutely.
Take care.
See you, Jeff.
Jeff Maris. Something? Your idea of music is Errol Vaughan. What else?
This guy's 90 years old. I mean, most of them passed away, aren't they?
Yeah, they're all dead.
I'm just saying.
Well, Carlos Santana is still living. Who do you like, Beyonce? Who are you into?
No.
What are you into?
I'm into a lot of other stuff.
Give me an example.
70 bands. I like bands. Queen, Chicago.
Well, those bands were around. Those are bands that I'm talking about.
Great bands. You kidding?
Right? I'm talking about those bands.
Oh, yeah. Jethro Tull. What band is he in?
John, would you help me here? I am begging you to help me here.
Why are we talking about music?
Because he's a music freak. He's like me. He's a music freak. Right. I know he is.
Don't start me. My daughter's going to Berkeley.
I know that. I remember you told me that. She's at Berkeley.
Come on.
She's at Berkeley, and she's rock and roll all the time.
Does she sing? Is she vocal?
She does background vocals. She plays electric bass. And
can I tell you something?
Great.
I took lessons there, and piano and drums.
For how long?
About 5 minutes. No, I did.
You know something? There is a big market for female bass players. Big market.
Yes.
What, in cards?
Seriously, with bands. Bass players, they're starting to feature them.
Absolutely.
Good for her, John. I'm glad to hear that. I know we're talking a little music. John, one last music question. Have you ever been to Haight-Ashbury?
No.
Oh, you gotta go to Haight-Ashbury.
I've been there spiritually.
You have to get in. Someday when you're in San Francisco, you got to walk down to Haight-Ashbury. It's eye-opening because the place has not changed except for the generations. It's like unbelievable. You'll walk down the street and you'll see a 70-year-old hippie and you'll see a 25-year-old hippie walking down the street together. Because a lot of the originals never left there. It's unbelievable. Sure. It really is. It's a good take. All right. I know I digress. Let's get to John Tarby. John, I have a question for you. Rico and I were talking about it prior to the going on the air.
Yeah.
REA had an auction that incorporated a Ty Cobb bat and a Roger Bresnahan bat. And they said they were game used, and they only went for about $3,000 or $4,000 a piece. Can you explain exactly what type of bats those were? Because I know that you authenticated them.
Yeah, these bats, we refer to them as an off-label. With the on-label bats from the era being, Louisville Sluggers.
Yep.
The Cobb and the Bresnahan, I believe they were Spalding bats. And what we do, we look at those models. They are identical to the bats that are featured in Spalding catalogs, where Cobb, you'll find, well, during the 20s and during 1908 to 11, Cobb first signs an endorsement contract with Louisville in 1908. Okay. Now, the Spalding bats that were being used by the players, you, myself, Rico, you know, with the time, you know, we could buy these bats right from the catalog, and they were virtually identical to the player bats. Minus strong provenance, not, well, I got the bat from this guy or I got the bat from that guy.
Yeah.
But minus strong provenance, we grade these bats GU6 because in light of the fact that they're identical to the length, to the weight of the bats used by the players, you know, you cannot fully discount the possibility it was game used, you know, at the professional level.
So there's no way, though, that you could really prove it then if you buy it. I mean, can you imagine buying a bat like that for $3,500 and find out that the guy really did use it, like Cobb or Bresnahan? But there's no way to find that out.
Well, not really, unless you have a eureka moment and you're able to photo match a bat in the player's hands.
Right, right. Yeah,
or family members.
Yep.
So what I want to ask you about this composite bats. You think they'll ever get to the big leagues?
Well, put it this way. If they make it to the big leagues, I don't want to be a pitcher.
Wait a second.
Right.
I'm telling you. Rico, you know, they come off the barrel of the bat at a much higher velocity than a wooden bat.
Yeah, not as much as the metal. But here's 1 year in spring training, the Red Sox, somebody came out with a composite bat.
Is this when you were playing?
Yes.
Yeah. And everybody tried it, you know, the minor leagues, everything. The whole time, the whole spring training, one bat was broken or chipped. Every other bat was, I mean, we loved them. I mean, they did jump off the bat a little.
Exactly.
Pretty good.
That would really beef up batting averages.
No, but I'm saying, why don't colleges use them?
They do.
Do
colleges? That's a good question.
Go ahead, John.
Yeah, Rico, let's qualify. When you're saying composite, back in the early, mid-60s, what came was a spline bat. They called them spline bats. And what it was it was an ash bat, and then they inlaid maple.
Okay. Really?
Into the ash, yeah, to harden the hitting surface.
Yeah, yeah, so.
And we've seen, you know, within the hobby, you see, Mickey Mantle, you see Yogi Berra, you see other players, and on the barrel of the bat, rather than powerized, it'll say spline.
No kidding.
And those bats, yeah. And for some reason, they didn't catch on.
Yeah.
You know, and then later on.
And, right. And you said it had better velocity.
Well, a little bit better. Oh, yeah. But really, maybe they were doing it because, bats were, although they wouldn't worry about the price, I wouldn't think. But we order dozen bats 4 or 5 times a year.
John, are aluminum bats at the lower levels, Little League, Babe Ruth, are they becoming obsolete because of composite bats?
I can't tell you exactly what they're using at those levels, but they're expensive.
Yeah,
and,
but they have them.
$300-$400 more.
Yeah, but Rico, for kids, my grandson, 9 years old. He's a big kid. Yeah. He bought his composite bat.
Right. Yeah.
Now he's going to take it 4 years into Little League.
Well, I'm not saying that, you know.
They don't crack.
No.
Yeah. But I mean, still, you know.
Are they safer? Is a composite bat safer than an aluminum bat?
I'd say so.
When you say safer, you mean
coming off the bat?
Yeah, coming off the bat with the velocity.
Being able to use it without cracking.
Correct. And the velocity coming off the bat.
I would say they're pretty close. You know, when you get to aluminum and a composite bat, it's going to be close. And I don't know. I was talking to some guys who were playing at a fairly high level, you know, in college.
Yeah.
And in college, they're still using these composite bats and these aluminum bats.
There's nothing where I hate the sound.
That's because economically they...
Oh, absolutely. The colleges,
it's all economics, sure. It's all economics. But I'm telling you, you know, you get a line drive up the middle and...
take your head off.
John, they didn't have name. The composite bats that, we didn't have our names on the bat. So I don't know if there's any bats that have names
that
on
are endorsed
them.
By major league players.
No, but just put the name on there and they used, would they be worth anything if there's any around?
Well, we find that without the player name, there is a discount in the marketplace to the bat itself.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yep.
Collectors like to, you know, when it's up on the wall, they like to look at it and they like to see a player name on it.
Yeah, yeah, no, definitely.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. John Tarby is in the house for the rest of the show. Very excited about it. We're going to get into some really good bat stuff because he's the Batman.
He is. Right?
But we're going to come back. Bats. And when we come back, we're coming back with another Gax Blast from the past.
They do now.
Hang in there. We'll be right back.
Since 1996, Brian Drent and the staff at Denver's Mile High Card Company have led the charge in the collectibles hobby. Mile High is a full-service dealer specializing in buying and selling cards and offers a competitive consignment program for all collectors. Whether it be their computerized want list service, appraisals, or auction services, Mile High has it all. If you've been searching for a company with a selection of high-grade vintage 1888 to 1970 baseball cards and memorabilia that shares your passion, aim high, mile high. Go to milehighcardco.com or call 303-840-2784 for more information.
With record-breaking sales from everything from the white border T206 Hollandus Wagner for $3.12 million to some great items that support the Jackie Robinson Foundation, Golden Auctions has set the highest standards for the finest in sports cards, autographs, and game-used memorabilia. We're always accepting consignments of high-end premium sports treasures or entire collections. Please register for our next auction and bid now at goldenauctions.com. That's golden with an I. We at Golden Auctions are committed to providing unsurpassed customer service for the discriminating collector. That's exactly why we're the leader in the industry. Visit goldenauctions.com or call 856-767-8550. Remember, Golden Auctions. We don't just break records, we shatter them.
This is Brian Drent, president of Mile High Card Company. Is your sports card and memorabilia collection properly insured? For easily replaced personal property, homeowners insurance is all most people need. But for prized possessions that you may have spent a lifetime collecting, it doesn't go nearly far enough. Collectibles Insurance Services has been insuring for over 50 years. They offer a full range of protection and a $0 deductible at an affordable rate with no appraisals required. I know because they insure my collection. If you have a minute, go to collectinsure.com and learn more about insuring your personal card or memorabilia collection.
Are you a collector looking for that rare trading card or autographed ball or photo? If so, then PB Collectibles in Newport is the place for you. PB Collectibles has graded cards, raw cards, complete sets, and wax boxes of the stars of the future, today, and from the past. We also offer a large selection of both vintage and modern cards. So whether you're looking to add to your collection or sell it, visit us at PB Collectibles, 269 Spring Street in Newport, located across from St. Mary's Church. We are your neighborhood card shop and much more.
Hi, this is Dan from Memory Lane Auctions, here to remind you that the renowned Memory Lane Collectibles Company has served as a beacon of light to the collecting community for the past several decades. Indeed, folks, it has been our utmost privilege and pleasure to provide the most enthusiastic collectors with an abundance of the finest sports cards and memorabilia for America's most coveted sports personalities via our world-class auctions. Whether you choose either a private sale transaction or the auction route, Memory Lane cordially invites you to reach out to us to maximize the value of your prized possessions. Also, it is not just sales that we pride ourselves on being the best of the rest, because if you are seeking a particular keepsake for your esteemed gathering, we will be relentless in our quest to find that special piece to fulfill your collecting dreams. So no time to wait. Reach out to us today for the purposes of capitalizing on our unparalleled marketing capabilities. Simply pick up the phone and dial 877 606-5263. That's 877-606-LANE, or find us on the World Wide Web at www.memorylaneinc.com. Now is the time for your valued consignment to ultimately become another one of Memory Lane's record-setting prices.
How would you like to own the bat that was used by your favorite player when he hit that towering home run or game-winning base hit? Now look no further than JT Sports, specializing in the sale and authentication of professional game-used bats. As the official authenticators of professional model game-used bats for PSA DNA, JT Sports will guarantee the authenticity of any bat purchased from them. JT Sports also buys and sells game-worn uniforms, gloves, and baseball equipment. The unique quality of the collectible is what JT Sports is all about. Give them a call at 609-487-8003 or check them out at GameUsedBats.com.
Okay, we are back. And John Tarby from JT, what are you doing?
I'm doodling while you're talking.
What is that, though?
Hey, look at this.
What is that supposed to be?
That's like the vampire.
What is that supposed
Count
to be?
Count Dracula. Give him the horns. Get the Yankee hat
See
on.
See it clearly?
Now we love the Yankees.
No, we love the Yankees, John. Oh. All right, it's time for another Gax Blast from the Past.
Oh, really?
This week, this is probably a little film clip that everybody has seen. But everybody? It brings back good memories to Mr. Petrocelli, I'm sure. And we're going to...
I have no memory left.
Actually, you're in this, by the way.
Really?
Yeah. We're going to go back to 1975, John. And Bernie Carbo has tied the game against Game 6 against the... was it 5 or 6?
6.
Game 6 against the St. Louis Cardinals. Bernie Carbo has tied it up. And now it goes into extra innings. And one, Carlton Fisk is up at bat. The Fisk shot.
And the wind blowing out. We've had three homers tonight, all to right field or right or center field. Carbo's was to dead center. The other two to right. There's a ball.
Notice you jumping on his back.
Yeah.
Chrissy, watch Rico. He jumps on his back.
Big deal. Here's this.
Bang. There it goes. A long drive. If it stays fair, home run.
See that ball? Oh, good. Now, look at the kids. Watch him give one kid a shove.
Well, yeah, they're not supposed to be on the field.
Right there. Boom. Now, watch Rico, Chrissy. When they're running off, Rico's on his back.
Fell down.
Look, oh,
there
you are.
Yeah, I see.
Watch.
Just couldn't get the
thing. Watch. Now you're looking for your hat.
We yeah. will have a seventh game in this 1975 World Series.
Now, I was
Carlton
in the dugout.
Fisk becomes the first player in the series to hit one over the wall into the net. Red Sox win it 7-6. In 12 innings, and Carlton Fisk had a lot of little boy in him right there, Joe.
He took one step, knew it was going to be close, he knew it was gone, and it was dancing in the streets all the way around. Johnny Pesky greets him at first base, and he is dancing.
A lot of body English for Carlton Fisk. Watch it.
How many steps does he take? One, he waits to see it.
That was amazing. That really was.
He knew it. There it is.
That is such an iconic piece of film.
Well, especially for Boston.
Oh, yeah, God. John, I was 22 years old. I had just gotten out of college. I was teaching college up in Maine. Teaching elementary school up in Maine. And I'll never forget that as long as I live, because I'm by myself into my living room, and I was jumping up and down like a lunatic. John, you remember that game, of course, right?
Oh, of course. Of course. And, you know, I'm looking at the expression on Rico's face. takes him back. You relive that a little bit, huh?
Yeah, yeah. I was.
You were in the dugout.
Man. I was in the dugout, and we jumped him, and the dugout Fenway was small. I
mean, you hit your head.
I almost hit my head. I actually hit it. Thank God I didn't really, you know, whack it. But it was so exciting. But I was on first base when Carbo hit the three-run home run to tie it, and I still get the chills when I think of that.
That was that is such an underrated piece of baseball history, because if it's not for Bernie Carbo, there is no Carlton Fisk home run.
Right.
You know, that was a three.
It was a great series. Cincinnati was a great team.
Little hobby trivia, you know, Fisk used Rick Burleson's bat to hit that home run.
That's right. You're right.
Did you know that?
No. Yes and no. Somebody else told me, but I think. But anyway, you're right. And what about, are those bats ever available?
Do you know anything about that bat, John?
No, I don't know where the Burleson bat is.
Yeah.
That was the, I don't want to call it an urban legend. That's the story behind that.
I wonder about the ball. Did anybody? What happened? Did Fisk get the ball?
No. What's the left fielder?
George Foster?
Foster got it.
He kept it,
and they finally sold it. Didn't he sell it to Sheen? Martin Sheen for like $93,000? I think so. And then it's actually worth more. I wish I would have got it.
So, John, let's hypothetically.
Sure.
What would that bat be in value?
That's first of all, it belongs in an auction. And I would say, you know, when you get into the Boston area and Boston fans, it's got to be six figures. I mean, because of the moment, you know, the moment is, you know, I'm surprised that you're saying it. When you referred to the Carbo home run being very underrated.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 Not Fisk. I'm talking about the Carbo home run. Carbo home run never got the – I still don't think it's ever got its just due. But if it wasn't for the Carbo home run, there would be no Fisk home run.
Right. Well, Fisk wins the game, you know, walk-off.
Carbo,
of course. I agree.
It was a three-run shot.
It was
By the way, how did you get on base? Did you hit a single?
I walked. Yeah, it was kind of good eye.
He walked.
What a great World Series.
It really was. And the only thing about that World Series was the Big Red Machine, they were awesome.
There you go.
But their pitching staff was very suspect.
I mean, they were very hittable.
Who was that big guy? He just died.
What
was his name? Don Gullett.
Gullett, yeah.
Yeah.
All that equipment from all that series, you know, with Cincinnati, of course, they had some great players. A guy should be in the Hall of Fame.
Dwight Evans?
No. Well, yeah. But Mr. Rose.
Oh, I agree.
They had a great offensive team.
It was on a team of all-stars.
And defense.
Pretty much a team of all-stars.
Their stuff, do you hear of anything about bats?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Around?
There are a few bats that are documented to the 75 World Series.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and cherished. You know, these bats, also they had a very large, they had a different logo.
They had a different logo?
There was a larger logo on the World Series bats. Same center brand, but a bit larger.
Interesting.
Again, when you get into the bats of the key players, very, very desirable. No question. Mm.
John, what about movie bats? Like, for instance, the bat that was used in The Natural, Wonder Boy. Now, mm-hmm. I don't know how many they made, but the original bats from the actual scenes, do they exist? Do they have private owners? Do you know anything about those bats?
I'm familiar. I've seen one Wonder Boy. Don't know how many they actually made up. But there's a few collectors who, will maybe not focus, but, movie memorabilia will appeal to them. I know that I think there's a couple of pieces from the Pride of the Yankees you know, the Lou Gehrig story with Gary Cooper. Gary Cooper. And, you know, the trivia with that one is he was a right-handed hitter. So everything that they made up with for him was back, you know, was back when the camera hit him.
Interesting.
Where do you come across the bat? Where do people mostly get the bats? I mean, they hold on to them for years, let's say. Or do you find people, you know, coming up with bats at crazy places? Because I was wondering, some of these older bats, I don't mean even Ruth and Gehrig and them, guys like Aaron and, you know, Ted Williams and Musial and all those people. I mean, those bat people hold on to them? They talk about it? Did they talk about it?
Well, are you talking about the players retaining the equipment?
Either that or just people. They got the bat somehow, some way. Could even be family members.
Well, you know, back then, you know, first of all, there's no value. You know, remember that back when we're talking about even in the 70s.
Yeah.
You know, when you get into that 75 periods, the 60s, the 50s. You know, back then, a lot of these bats, you know, Hank Aaron would crack a bat. They'd put it in the end of the dugout, you know, when, you know, down in maybe the Red Sox had one of these, Rico, where the crack bats went. And then at the end of the game, the bat boys could take them or they threw them away, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But what happens, you know, a lot when the fans got them, a lot of these bats, especially, you know, when it's a bigger player, they stayed within the family for years and years, and they were keepsakes.
Yeah.
You know, great pieces. And we still have families coming in, bringing in material for authentication. And, you know.
That's very cool. Rico.
We're still fine.
Did your bat boys, would that happen? Would, like, broken bats be given, they would take them? Or, you know, guys like clubhouse guys would take them as souvenirs? Yeah,
maybe. I think a lot of it was thrown away.
Really?
Early in my career in the 60s, no one thought about the industry growing and all that. Bats would be worth that much. So a couple of kids might have taken them, you know, bat boys, just to have them, or was thrown out or burned.
Yeah.
But
over the years, you know, we've had a few bats walk, you know, come in the door with history from the family, and their family member worked at the stadium and he got it out of the trash can.
Yeah.
Wow.
When you hear stories like that, it's
Billy Conigliaro, he went to Oakland and he said, in order to get a new bat, you get a crack bat. You have to give that bat into turn it into a person, and they'll give you another bat.
That was because Charlie was cheap.
Charlie, yeah, I guess so. I could just see that. Oh, broken bat. Okay, there it is. Yeah, thank you very much. Broken it again. Hey, whoop. I'm sorry. So we don't have any more of your bats,
John.
But, you know, go ahead. The hobby industry is really responsible for all the, you know, the outlets now that you see in the new ballparks. They all have these team stores where you can go in and, you know, buy crack bats. You can purchase uniforms, game used baseball.
I did not realize
cards.
I didn't, yeah, but oh, I mean, sure. Game used stuff.
Yeah.
I Back did. In the 90s.
Oh, right, yeah, yeah.
Early 90s, mid 90s, late 90s, as the hobby grew and the prices on these bats became appreciable, you know, the ball clubs got wise. They said, well, why, you know, why throw them out still when we can make the money in a team store?
John.
And a lot of this.
Sure.
There's a lot of, there are a zillion antique shops in Massachusetts, especially down by the coast.
Yeah.
There's tons of them, one in every corner. And many times I've been in these antique shops, and they have these little garages or warehouses, and a lot of them have bats, you know, barrels just filled with bats from the 1920s, 30s, 40s, 60s. Some of them are beat to hell. They're all store-bought, I'm sure. Is there any value to those bats at all? Like, for instance, just a Louisville Slugger from 1955, with a Mickey Mantle, you know, it's a Mickey Mantle model. Is there any value to those bats?
Store-bought.
Well, when you get into a retail bat, condition means a lot. If they're beat up, like you're saying, they're going to have very little value. We just had a gentleman walk in with a Roberto Clemente. Same thing, mid-60s. It was in decent shape, but stamped on the knob is RC4, and there's foil stamping rather than a brand on the barrel.
Yeah.
And something like that may be worth $75 to $125.
Yeah.
So there's not a lot of value, but some, if it's a name player, a big player.
There's got to be bats out there. I mean,
I agree with that. There's got to be a lot. I'll tell you what. I agree with Rico. There's got to be a lot of bats still out there that you have not seen that hopefully you will see at some point. But yeah, are we right there? Because this all, you said it yourself, this all kind of percolated up in the 90s. There's got to be a lot of bats out there that people are holding on to.
Well, it's amazing. I talk about that, often. It's incredible when I see bats, they just continue to come in.
Right.
We've been authenticating and grading bats for PSA for 20 years or more.
Yeah.
And the supply
keeps coming, which is great.
Doesn't end.
I have
the
a question for you.
Not there.
Yeah.
You have what do you have for bats at home? Any? No, honestly.
No, wait a minute. I gave it to my sons.
Okay.
My World Series bats and All-Star bats.
Okay, so your kids, Mike and the kids,
have four sons.
Okay, so they have those bats.
They have
John, do you advise Rico to have, I mean, obviously it's Rico, he's the father, I'm sure there's provenance, but should his kids have those bats authenticated? His All-Star bat, World Series bats, should they be authenticated?
And should I sign them?
That's a good question. Should they be signed?
Yes, you should sign them. And any bat that is related to a World Series and a player like yourself, Rico, need to be authenticated.
Yeah, man, you got to do that.
You know, God forbid anything happens, the family has it. You have a letter of authenticity that answers all the questions.
Yeah, yeah.
You need to think about that.
From two World Series, 67 and 75.
And then you have some All-Star bats that I know of.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
that's very important, Rico.
So yeah, I'll do that. Thanks.
You know, if you want to give me one.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, right.
Just a batting practice bat. I'll take anything.
No, 50 grand. Don't worry about it.
You know,
no, but thanks.
You got to do that.
I didn't think of that. That's
did you use them, Rico? Did you use your World Series bats and All-Star bats during the event?
Yeah, I forgot.
No,
I forgot, to be honest with you. You know, going into the series, '75, we had the playoffs with Oakland.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, there was no bat. I used my regular bat, and I just can't think. I don't think so. I might have used it for one game and thought, hey, I don't want to use these. You know,
is there more value to that bat if he would have used it or not?
Well,
game use.
Right. Always more value they're used.
Yeah.
And with World Series, you know, we try to, when we're authenticating, we try to relate the amount of use that's on the bat to the number of at bats Rico might have had in the World Series. Same thing in the All-Star game. You may have an All-Star bat with a single ball mark, but that's what it should have.
Yeah.
Before we take a break, one last question for you. Your 40th home run bat is at the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Do you own that bat?
No.
Would you give it to them?
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
Or did you loan it to them?
I gave it to them, I guess, and I don't feel bad about it because it's an honor to have something in the Hall of Fame.
I agree.
You know, I mean, I got the ball, right, the 40th home run.
Before we take a break, John, I'm going to ask you one question.
Well,
so if Rico would have kept the bat and it was authenticated, what would that bat be worth, his 40th home run bat?
For a Boston guy, a Boston
player. You put me on the spot here.
Yeah, it's
Boston Red.
But hold on. It's the bat. It's 40 home runs.
First shortstop that broke
the record for shortstops.
Yeah, at that time.
Right?
I think if you get a couple of Red Sox involved, Red Sox fans involved. I think the bat probably, I'll use an appropriate number, 40,000 plus.
That's why I asked the question
again.
That's exactly why I asked the question. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break. I don't want to hear it.
You got the number of the Hall of Fame?
I don't want to hear it.
Give me my bat back.
All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break. We come back. It's going to be On Deck with Rico, and John's going to be with us till the very end. I told you you should have held on to it.
You could.
We'll be right back.
Christine Auction is a family-owned and operated online auction specializing in autographed memorabilia, sports cards, coins, art, and collectibles. Since their founding in 2010, they've grown to two facilities in Phoenix, Arizona, totaling over 60,000 square feet. Jared Cavalli and an incredible staff of over 150 team members serve a very large customer base and enjoy every minute of it. By working with leading authentication companies, Pristine ensures all items are 100% authentic. In addition, third-party authenticators regularly travel to Pristine Auction to provide authentication services on-site. Pristine Auction strives to operate its business in a way that's honoring to God, their families, and their customers. With a strong focus on speed, quality, and premier customer service, their mission is to be the leading online auction for every level of collector and fan. Pristine also works for Hope Sports and Identity Hoops International, traveling to Mexico to build houses for the less fortunate. Pristine Auction offers several online auction formats with thousands of auctions ending each day. For more information, go to pristineauction.com. That's Pristine Auction, the best in the business.
If you're a discerning collector interested in owning the most important pieces in the hobby, look no further than Leland's Auctions. The original sports auction and appraisal house, Leland's was established in 1985 by legendary Pioneer founder Joshua Leland Evans. And today, President Mike Hefner carries on the tradition. From the Tom Brady card and memorabilia collection to the famed Boston Garden auction to high-end card auctions from every major sport, Leland's has always maintained the highest standards. Go to Leland's.com and get your bid in. That's Leland's, the hobby's leading sports auction house for four decades.
It's often been said that championships are won on the practice field, and world records come only to those willing to work harder than everybody else. Heritage Auctions is the world's largest collectibles auctioneer, because we believe that becoming the best is only an invitation to the challenge of remaining the best. This requires the skills of the hobby's top experts, capable of identifying and maximizing value for our consigners. It requires the most visited website in the industry, courting a global audience of collectors over 1.5 million strong. It requires a dedicated press department that expands our global reach far beyond the entrenched hobby marketplace. It's hard work, but a simple premise. Present the finest collectibles to the largest population of potential buyers, and world records will come. We invite all listeners to put the unmatched power of Heritage Auctions to work for you. Auction evaluations are always free, and our commission-based fee structure ensures that our interests are always aligned. The highest possible price for your collectibles. There will always be new world records to chase, so let's chase them together. Visit our website at ha.com and request your no-obligation review today.
Hi, this is Dan from Memory Lane Auctions, here to remind you that the renowned Memory Lane Collectibles Company has served as a beacon of light to the collecting community for the past several decades. Indeed, folks, it has been our utmost privilege and pleasure to provide the most enthusiastic collectors with an abundance of the finest sports cards and memorabilia for America's most coveted sports personalities via our world-class auctions. Whether you choose either a private sale transaction or the auction route, Memory Lane cordially invites you to reach out to us to maximize the value of your prized possessions. Also, it is not just sales that we pride ourselves on being the best of the rest, because if you are seeking a particular keepsake for your esteemed gathering, we will be relentless in our quest to find that special piece to fulfill your collecting dreams. So no time to wait. Reach out to us today for the purposes of capitalizing on our unparalleled marketing capabilities. Simply pick up the phone and dial 877-606-5263. That's 877-606-LANE
or find us on the World Wide Web at www.memorylaneinc.com. Now is the time for your valued consignment to ultimately become another one of Memory Lane's record-setting prices.
Hey, I'm Mike Petroselli. If your company is looking for the best in marketing and promotional items, you'll hit a home run with Petroselli Marketing. With over 8,000 suppliers and 650,000 imprint-ready items, we can get your company the visibility it needs to get your maximum exposure. Whether it be office promotions, wearables, automotive, sports items, and everything in between, Petroselli Marketing can do it all. Our design staff will even work with you from concept to delivery and customize your products. At Petroselli Marketing Group, we will get your brand in front of your audience. Contact us at info@petrocellimkt.com or call us at 603-880-3202. That's Petroselli Marketing, where no dream is impossible.
Yes, Petroselli Marketing, folks. Give Mike a call. He's a real good kid. He gave you a 603 number. I'll give you 800-860-4623.
Petroselli Pens.
Got pens, you know, all the promotional stuff. Plus, he has clients all over the country. So if you're listening or watching, you're from another state.
Petroselli Marketing.
Yeah, all right. Jeez, give me a chance. Give the kid, you know, Social Security. You know, I may need some help.
Social Security. All right. It is time for our segment On Deck with Rico, brought to us by our good friend Brian Dwyer and the great staff at REA Auctions. Don't forget to get your bid in by going to RobertEdwardAuctions.com. That's Robert Edward Auctions for extraordinary results and extraordinary service. And by the way,
number six on the roster, but number six in our hearts. Number one in our hearts.
Number six
on deck with Rico Patricelli.
Rico, before I ask the question,
go ahead.
I was remiss in a Gax blast from the past, brought to us by our good friend Paul Borges, who's going to be here next week, and pbcollectibles.com.
Paul. Thank you, Paul.
All right, really. His question was from Mark Castellano. Yeah. Rico, of all the minor leaguers you manage, who were the two or three can't-miss players that came in and you saw something right at the very beginning?
Yeah. You know, I managed with the White Sox minor league system 2 years at Double A, one at A, and they signed what's his name, Jack. They call him Black Jack. Big right
McDowell.
Yeah, he came. I think from Stanford. He came to us. Mo Drabowski was the pitching coach, and can't miss. I mean, this guy was had
you could
great
tell
stuff.
right out of the game.
Oh, I mean, well, he was number one pick for, so you know he's going to get a shot. First game, he got lit up. I want to tell you.
Paul's, really, really?
Oh, geez. We looked at each other. Who the hell signed this kid? And he made it, and it was a pretty good pitcher.
What about Red Sox?
Nomar Garcia-Para. Good miss. Great talent.
Soon as you saw him.
Oh, yeah. Mo Vaughn came down at Pawtucket Triple-A ball when he was struggling the first month with the Red Sox. Can't miss. I mean, he was just incredible. And then there's Veritek and Lowe. Came from Seattle in a trade. You could see these guys were Lowe's sinker must have sank that much. He had really a great sinker.
What about Mike Greenwell? Did you ever have him?
No. Trying to think of Valentin.
John Valentin.
Sorry. John Valentin, six. I tell you the story about we had six doubleheaders to make up the last because we were fighting for the playoff spot. He after the four of them, or two doubleheaders, he came to me and said, Skipper, you know, they call you a skipper. You think I can have a day off?
You said no.
I said, how old are you, John? 21. I says,
no.
You don't need a day off. And he was a hell of a player.
He was a good ball player.
Yeah, he was.
He was cut short. He had some injuries.
He moved over to third. That's that.
Let's move on. We're talking to John Tardy from JT Sports. And by the way, John was nice enough to help us with this book, Legendary Lumber, John and Vince. Ellen and I wrote this with Joe Orlando. And this book, by the way, sold out. we're very pleased that it's sold out. They are having another printing, and
that's a great book.
Yeah, it was actually this book
I
won. This book won the Ben Franklin Gold Medal and the Independent Publishers Silver Medal.
Yeah,
yeah, that was a great book, John. And thank you, John. You did an unbelievable job with that book.
Did you have
Bats? Wait, let him answer.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Let's repeat that. John, you did a great job with that book.
Thank you for letting me be involved.
Oh, no, you and Vince, are you kidding? But yeah. And by the way, so if you ever want a copy, you can go to tomzaplermedia.com. We're going to get some copies made. They'll be made quickly, and we can get them to you. Go ahead.
Well, I was wondering if you had gone through some bats from the Giants with Mays and McCovey, especially. Of course, they guys that went through the Giants are some great players, among other teams too. You know, but did you see those bats? You see some of them with the pine tar on it and all that?
Oh, you know, believe it or not, you're talking about two great players, but their bats are, I don't want to use the word common, but we do see them. You know,
really?
We do see them often.
Wow.
Especially Willie Mays. You know, as Willie Mays comes into the 60s up until the time he retires.
Hmm.
I mean,
played a lot of years.
Arguably, he's the greatest player in the game during that time span. And
yeah, it was great.
Boom. I mean, you know, he gave away a lot of bats. We see a lot of signed bats, and Willie McCovey, too.
McCovey, we are chatting with John Tarby from JT Sports.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us about our good friend Charlie and JRI Cards?
Let's take some time. Because
no, don't take your time. We got 4 minutes.
No, I didn't say take my time. I said
take the time.
For JR Cards, JM El Rico. Do you want to have
an absolute
blast?
You're not supposed to read that.
Well, why do you got it in
because
there
Because just in case. It was a mistake.
Oh, that's, John Mallory. All right, Rico. This is Rico.
Christy, will you help me here?
If you want to have an absolute blast at obtaining some great modern and vintage cards, you got to check out JRI Cards, folks. Our paisan Charlie, the Iron Ripper Perino, along with Money Marco, the Dollar Dollar Girls, and the JRI Gang give you the choice or the chance to participate in opening a graded, unopened, and sealed fresh wax or cello.
This is like getting a root canal.
Of your favorite sport or non-sport favorite. It's easy. You buy in, Charlie opens the pack, and you get a pack fresh card. It's that simple. As a matter of fact, if you pull that special jewel, the guys at JRI Cards will even have it graded for you on the house. Featured in the LA Times, ESPN, and USA Radio, or the internet, Charlie and his staff make it fun, entertaining, and enjoyable with his collection of hats and sound effects. And don't forget that JRI donates a part. JRI donates a part of their proceeds to various charities. What's that one, too? The
Just go.
The Zeppelin Charity. That's JRI Cards. Check out their exclusive breaks and events. Everyone is talking about. All right. They're always digging up cardboard treasures. For a great hobby experience, go to JRICards.com. You know, I laughed because of your face. I looked at your face. All right, folks.
All right. Listen, we're almost out of time.
I won't be here for 2 weeks, so, you know.
John Tarby, you know what you mean to us. We love having
He's
you.
Great.
We have such a good time with you. I think you understand what we're all about. There's not a lot of substance here.
John, no, he understands.
Rico, great job.
Yeah, thanks. We're going to see you at the National.
Do you realize that somebody paid us for him to read that? You do realize that, right?
Well,
we should be sending him a
this
check.
This is a book. I mean, how many ads are this long?
That's Charlie.
We
love them. We love
them. Great. They're great.
We love Charlie.
We saw their studio, the whole operation. Fabulous.
John, we'll probably have you on one more time before the National, but we're looking forward. We'll obviously come down and visit you, but we'll see you down the road, man. We love you.
Yeah, we'll be there. Can't wait to get to the IX Center.
There you go. GameUseBats.com, correct?
That's correct.
Hey,
John Tarby.
John, he's going to buy you lunch.
I'll be happy to.
All right.
Be happy to. With that being said, John, thank you very much.
John.
Oh, by the way, programming note real quickly.
Yeah.
I am not here next week. Hmm. JM, John Mallory, is going to be co-hosting along with Dan Wilkin from Memory Lane and Paul Borges from PB Collectibles. Yeah, I will be right. on the West Coast.
Oh, that's right. You're visiting, visiting family, family on the West Coast.
With that's that great. Being said, happy collecting.
Thanks.
See you guys.
Bye-bye, John.
The views and opinions expressed by the hosts, guests, or callers of this program do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the Studio 21, Podcast Cafe, the United Podcast Network, its partners or affiliates.